Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Check out the new podcast, I Am Kobe. Do you want to understand how Kobe Bryant achieved his unequal determination? How did he come to his incredible passion to win? In I Am Kobe, we reveal intimate, never-before-heard tapes of Kobe when he was a teenager, just as he was starting to glimpse his own greatness. It's about the making of an icon. We weave together these tapes with Kobe's high school coaches, his friends, and the figures who knew him in his youth. All episodes are out now, so you can binge the whole thing. Listen to I Am Kobe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Glory Edom, host of Well-Read Black Girl. Each week, we journey together through the cultural moment where art, culture, and literature collide and pay homage to the women whose books we grew up reading. It's the literary kickback you never knew you needed. Listen to Well-Read Black Girl on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Kate Flannery, and I played Meredith Palmer on The Office.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Office Deep Dive with me, that's right, your host, Brian Baumgartner. On today's show, we have the incredible Kate Flannery, as you just heard. Now, I have always felt a special bond with Kate, because I think more than anyone else in the cast, Kate and I, we put our bodies on the line for the show. I mean, just in terms of pure physical comedy and like shameless personal humiliation, I think Kate and I deserve medals for bravery. And maybe Kate most of all. She was just completely fearless, and she was always up for anything she was asked to do. In fact, the last time I saw Kate before we sat down for this conversation, I went to see Kate in a taping for Dancing with the Stars that Kate was a contestant on. And she asked me to come see her perform, and I went, and let me be honest, it's kind of a weird experience. You're in this giant warehouse. There are assistants moving around everywhere. There's applause signs telling you when to laugh and when to clap and when to stand and when to sit. And then all of a sudden, the music starts, and Kate literally descends from the ceiling because she's doing this Mary Poppins number. She's Mary Poppins. And I see her start descending, and I immediately start crying. I am overcome with emotion because the fearlessness, and let's be honest, we're not spring chickens. And she had total commitment, and she was dancing her heart out. But that's Kate. Anyway, I did not cry in this interview, but we did talk about how Kate had to flash her boobs a lot on the show. So that was the thing. We didn't cry, but we talked about boobs. How's that for a setup? Without any more blabbering from me, here is the woman who bared it all for your entertainment, Kate Flannery.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
Well, well, well.
I'm so sorry. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How's it going?
Oh, my gosh.
Dude, this is awesome. They have you locked in a box.
Have me locked in a box. This is not our regular studio.
Oh, okay.
Yes. This, I thought, was construction.
Oh.
But apparently it's a Foley.
Are you going to make Foley sounds?
Yeah, I'm going to just start running on the grass.
You could recreate the fire drill scene. Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Hysterical.
You can throw your coat on the thing unless you're cold.
I was. That's up to you. Not.
Is she fine here on the mic?
Can I talk about people behind their back on this?
Yeah.
Can I curse? Am I
you can say whatever you want.
Not that I curse.
Now, I know some of this, but 2004.
Yes.
What? Well, first of all, what was your training exactly? Like, what were you doing work-wise before The Office?
Well, I was in Chicago right after college. I studied theater in Philadelphia and Virginia for a couple years. And then I graduated from the University of Arts in Philly. And then my aunt sent me a ticket to check out Chicago and Second City because she thought it'd be a good fit. So I studied at Second City, and then I got hired by the touring company. So I knew Steve. Steve was in one of the resident companies when I was touring. But then I moved to New York. I did the year-long tour of the Real Life Brady Bunch a few years later, and then moved to New York for 6 months, and then got asked to do the show Valley of the Dolls in L.A., and then was here for about a year, and then came close to a few different shows. I was like up for the Dana Carvey show, which obviously Steve Carell and Steve Colbert got. Right. I tested for it, didn't get to, I came close. And then the show I was doing went off-Broadway, so I went to New York because I was in New York for 3 years.
Okay.
I'm old, dude.
How long were you in Chicago?
5 years.
So you were in Chicago.
Yeah.
In and around Second City for 5 years.
Yes.
Then went back to New York, then LA.
Yep.
Then back to New York for 3 years. And then when did you come back to LA?
In 99, I moved back because I got a new manager. And I was basically like waiting tables and started to do my comedy act, The Lampshades, and was, you know, just like doing some guest star stuff. I did Bernie Mac. I guess Creed was in the same episode that I did of Bernie Mac.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, he didn't have any lines. He was just like a doctor in the background or something. Yeah, it was just so funny. And then I booked a recurring gig on Boomtown. And my second episode, we were about to shoot, and they said that the show got canceled. So that was that.
Oh, my God.
And then I had auditioned for the pilot of The Office. I was up for the part of Jan. I read for the part of Jan. Did not get it. Obviously, they went a completely different way. But Allison Jones said that, I think the show is good for you, which was awesome. And then I just remember, like, doing my comedy act, like Lampshades, like we were supposed to do so many things and like kind of fell through. We were supposed to be on Mad TV for 4 episodes and then like they canceled. It was a whole lot of almost. And then I remember getting a call that they were trying to fill a spot after they shot the pilot in like August. You guys shot in February. And in August, I got the call to go in and read for Allison Jones. And then by the time I got home from that, then I found out I got the job because I didn't have a cell phone, so I had to wait for my landline to get the message.
Okay, so wait. So you read for Jan. I did not know that.
Yeah, yep. I did. But there would be too much sexual chemistry between me and Steve if I got that part. Anyway, she said she still thought I would be a good, like, that's what I love about Allison. It's like she remembers things. So I somehow registered, you know. And I remember going to the next audition for what became Meredith. I don't think she was called Meredith at the audition. But I remember they said no makeup, and like really no makeup. Usually when they say no makeup, it's like lip gloss and some mascara.
Right. But Allison was like really no makeup.
She's like, no. Take it off. Take it off. Take off the lashes. No, I wasn't wearing much, but yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So then you came back and at the time, do you remember what the description was of the character?
They just said she was lactose intolerant, divorced, and had a hysterectomy. Go. Very light shell, right?
Yeah. And yeah. You knew, who did you know?
I knew Angela because we were in an improv group, an all-chick improv group called Bitch Planet in 2000 in L.A. And I knew Steve because I knew him from Second City. And also, he did the first few months of the Really Brady Bunch. He was the first Greg Brady when we used to do that crazy show. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. But there was so much sexual chemistry between me and Steve that we could. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
I mean, you definitely showed your boobs to him a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time we shot that Christmas episode, he said, I'm not looking at them. I'm just going to stare at your clavicle. I was like, I think should I be insulted by that? Should I feel bad? I don't know what to do. He was such a gentleman, though. Really, I knew it was my best interest at heart that he had.
I have said many times, in terms of just pure comedy and the direction with McDougal and like everything, that moment with you at the end might be one of my favorite moments.
Oh my God.
Of the whole series.
Well, I think it was just so well directed too. And so like just the way that it played, it was such a subtle, unexpected, crazy.
So unexpected. And you have that like, that like gasp in of like, oh my gosh. And then him, just the look on his face and picking up that camera and taking a picture. Just is so perfect.
And even the moment after where you're like, he's not going to do anything. Like, he's like, he's done. That was it. That's all he wanted was the picture, which is so fantastic because I feel like so many other actors would have played that differently. And Steve had such economy and such brilliant. I mean, I'm sure you remember this, but I feel like every you never knew exactly what he was going to do. And he could do six different things in different takes, like completely different with the same words, with the same dialogue, and just be like, make these really amazing, subtle, strong choices. Crazy great.
I felt like I was watching someone who thought, I have to make the people in here laugh.
Right.
Like, that's what I'm going to do. And if we rehearse it and we do this and we do that, like, then everyone's going to expect what's going to happen.
Yes. He's so great at that. Yeah, that's so well put. Yeah. He definitely had a plan. He definitely had many, many ideas all the time. Oh my God, I'm such a deadbeat as an actor when I think of him. He's really one of those rare gems. And, you know, it's just shocking that he didn't win an Emmy for that role. But
kind of
not
a travesty.
Yeah, it is a travesty. But he's not a politician. He's never been. Never been. So, and I think some of it's politics, which is.
So you come back in and you are now reading for Meredith or unnamed hysterectomy character.
Right.
And did they show you the pilot? Did you see the pilot?
I saw the pilot later. I saw the pilot,
After you were cast?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Did you have any specific thoughts about it?
Well, I was nervous that it was exactly like the British pilot. I think everybody was nervous. But I still thought it was funny. And I thought what they added that was American was really funny. What's up? You know, and I thought everyone was much more understandable than the British version. I'm one of those people that watches the British Office with subtitles because I want to get it all. Is that terrible?
No, it's not terrible. When I walk through life with you, I need subtitles too. But you're just like Philly, Pennsylvania.
Right?
Yeah.
Am I hard to understand? Scranton. Sorry. Scranton.
So I heard that Greg made a conscious decision to stay as close to the British pilot. Because he thought if he did, the network couldn't give Notes.
Oh, wow. Brilliant. Brilliant. That makes so much sense. And I remember my boyfriend, Chris Haston, who I met on the show, he's a still photographer for NBC. He was shooting the pilot gallery. And he was told, if anybody looks at the camera, except for Steve, that's it. We're done. Like, Greg really wanted to look documentarian. And Chris said there were so many specific instructions because Greg was so protective of making sure to get this absolutely right. Thank God.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So even in the PR shoots, Chris, the photographer, was directed.
Yes. Which is never the case. I mean, very rarely. There might be a note or two, but nothing this intense. And Greg was like, just, you know, very stressed out about it. He just wanted to be absolutely right.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Do you feel like you had any specific hurdles or anything you had to overcome specifically because you weren't on the pilot?
Well, I wasn't sure if I was coming back every week. I wasn't sure. I remember talking to Phyllis about it. She goes, I think you might. I'm like, okay. Because I definitely felt like I was getting stories because I'm allowed to say that I replaced somebody from the pilot.
Yeah.
So I was getting stories that, like, you know, they're going to see, you know, if this is actually even a place. Like, maybe it's, you know, maybe this character won't even exist. I don't even know. So there was pressure, definitely. But I was like, okay, we'll see. I mean, everybody's nice. And they told, I don't know if you remember this, they told us to bring paperwork, so the first season, we literally sat at our desks because they wanted us to really be busy doing what looked like real office work. I thought that was so brilliant.
Yeah. Do you think that did anything to help create the ensemble?
I do, because I feel like everyone had a focus immediately. You weren't like looking for someone to throw you the ball. And if you did get the ball, you were busy doing your work. Like, that's what people doing a documentary. I mean, it must be so uncomfortable for somebody in a regular Scranton, Pennsylvania office to have a camera around. Like, that's not a comfort zone. There's nothing comfortable about that. So I love that was part of the mix. And then we had all this weird medical paperwork that was like, the prop department bought. So I remember creating these like weird little patterns of stapling things and I remember Jenna and I had a whole dance where we would have these weird clearance papers that we would sign for each other. It was so bizarre, but it was fantastic.
Right. Right. No one's talked about that before, but yeah, like our prop papers were essentially old expired medical documents
right.
from people's procedures, like yes. a bunch of the...
A ton of them. They lasted for years.
Yes. And I remember doing the same thing, like, oh, okay. And I would pull pieces of paper that looked more like Excel, like that,
like
look
numbers.
Like
yeah.
numbers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
and
so
graph.
Funny.
Right.
That's
so, like,
so funny.
So, like, if yeah. I had a whole thing that was mostly writing, I was like, well, this doesn't really look right. Right. Like,
right.
I need something that
course.
Looks like numbers.
Of course.
And then you would look and it would be like yeah, red blood cell count numbers for Jason Alexander from 1976.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow. Jason's okay, though, everybody. It's okay.
I think he's all right. Yeah.
It was bizarre. This is so pre internet.
Recycling.
There you go. All right. We were doing some green work. You're hilarious. Recycling. This is true. Repurposing.
Yes. A paper company office needs paper.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we were not destroying trees for this television show.
That's hilarious. And of course, you know, Ken Kwapis directing, like, go ahead. He'd never say action. Go ahead. Loved him. But understanding that, like, you're not just suddenly turning on. You're already in it. You're working. So just continue. Go ahead. Perfect. It's like the perfect direction.
Yeah.
He's a genius.
We talked to him about that some too.
Such a genius.
Yeah. Bringing us in early and having that 30 minutes of like work time.
Yeah.
And having us all there together in that room doing BS paperwork.
Yes.
You know,
and quiet.
And
yes.
Very quiet.
So quiet. Painful sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you would just hear like John or Leslie or Phyllis pretend to be on a sales
phone.
Call.
Sure. Sure. And then I also remember during the healthcare episode, that was the first time I improvised. And the whole thing about the uterus is different from a vagina. I still have a vagina. Yeah, I remember Greg telling me, I ran into him. I was still waiting tables during the first season. And I would see some people from the show at my restaurant. And I would see Ken Kwapis sometimes. And then I saw Greg, and I wasn't waiting on him. But he came up to me and said, I had to talk to you. I love that he like completely ignored that I was wearing a uniform. It was fantastic. He goes, I'm fighting with the network about... vagina. I just really want to keep it in. I'm really hoping it works out. And I was like, yeah. I mean, like, you just can't.
He came up to you. So yeah. You're working at Cape Manolini still.
Which is this Beverly Hills fancy restaurant where every famous person on the planet came in. Yeah.
So you were there through, when did you stop?
I stopped right before we started season two. So literally like a couple of weeks. So I covered my shifts during the week and then I used to work my Sunday brunch. And then because we only shot, it was, you know, after the pilot, it was just five episodes. So.
Right.
And then I remember Amy Heckerling came in with her parents. Brian Gordon came in. A few people came in and they kind of gave me this look like, oh, hi. Sorry. They were a little condescending or a little too sympathetic. I was like, it's fine. Whatever. I'm the 40-year-old waitress. I know. I get it. Steve's the 40-year-old virgin. I'm the 40-year-old waitress. Whatever. I mean, it is what it is, you know? And then when Greg came in, he completely ignored the fact that I was wearing, like, I love him for that so much. I mean, I'm sure he just was like, oh, we got business to attend to. Let's get to it, you know?
So were you still working there
when it started airing, yeah.
Did you have people come up to you?
I did. Actually, one time someone asked me, they said, hey, I have a question for you. Are you lactose intolerant? And I said, yes. Thanks for not bringing up my hysterectomy. So stupid. That was like their way of, yeah. And then I remember Marty Panzer, who was Barry Manilow's lyricist, was pissed because he said, I came in here on Tuesday nights and you, you're not here, but everybody.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Nobody wants to wait on me because they're all watching the show. They're all up at the bar watching you, and I can't get any good service. Like, whatever. Looks like you made it. So stupid. So dumb. Oh my god.
Did you think the show would be picked up?
I wasn't sure, and I remember we didn't get invited to the first upfronts, and I remember thinking like, okay, well. And I think technically we weren't regulars till Booskers. But I felt like we had a shot. I felt like there was some vibe, something that just felt different from anything else I'd ever been involved with. Yeah. It was really intense and really great. And it just unfolded so wonderfully. It was like a slow, steady, wonderful rise, which never happens in this town.
Right.
And I know that there had been mockumentary movies like Spinal Tap and stuff, but never a TV show. Even some of the mockumentary stuff, like I feel like our show is up with the very best. I mean, I really feel that way. Even all 9 seasons, like there's things where you just go, oh, yes, yes.
It's a hard time for hiring. So you need a hiring partner built for hard times. That's Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Offer valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
From the creator of The Bright Sessions comes a new fiction podcast for all ages. Jump back to 1997 and follow Maxine Miles as she starts high school in the picturesque town of Hastings, New Hampshire. Fall is the season in which this small town shines. Apple cider, pumpkin patches, farmers markets. It's idyllic for adults and boring for Max. But suddenly, Max's school year starts to look a bit more interesting when a fellow student vanishes. With the help of her misanthropic classmate, Ross, Max starts to look into the disappearance. her investigation draws her deep into the dark woods around Hastings and even deeper into the secrets and lies that course through the veins of this sleepy town. This new YA mystery from writer-director Lauren Shippen is an audio drama with heart and wit that involves the audience in a way no fiction podcast ever has. Listen to Maxine Miles on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
So The Office, you know, I want to tell you, I have this sort of theory that part of the specialness, not sure it's a word, specialness or uniqueness of the ensemble had to do with, you know,
how same, attractive we all were.
How
completely
fucking sexy we were. No,
but that was new. You know that was a new thing. You know, I mean, that was definitely a concept, is that we were not supposed to be attractive.
Right.
And I felt like I held that mantle pretty well. All 9 years, I just have to say. Some people ask for a little more makeup. I was like, nope, I'm sticking with the game. Sticking with it. Love it. Lived it. Living it. Love it. And my boyfriend used to say I look better taking out the trash than I did on the show. And which is fine with me. It's fine, you know.
Right.
And now I know I'm not looking so good. People go, you look exactly like you did on the show. Compliment and a dig.
Yes.
I'll take it all.
you know, we're in the same space. But you had you and Steve and Angela and Oscar, who you were great improvisers,
improvisational,
right?
Yeah.
And Rain and I, we were doing Chekhov, right? And then you had BJ and Craig doing stand-up, right?
Sure. So true. And you know, I love the way you broke it down. And were you in The Seagull or Three Sisters when you and Rain?
Three sisters. Three sisters. We did Three Sisters together. I also did The Seagull.
I was in The Seagull in college.
I think I was in The Three Sisters at least twice, once with Rain.
Hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's crazy.
That's so right on.
I mean, truly, like, I was doing the darkest of darkest.
Yes.
Drama.
Totally, and
it wasn't
totally
even comedy.
Worked. No. I used to always say that I was in a drama. I used to say that to Greg. Right. And actually, he said that to me once. He goes, this isn't a drama. And I was like, as for me, it is like
right. You are the only person from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Zach Woods is too.
Oh, Zach
yes,
Woods.
Yes, he's from Bucks County, but he came along later. So I was the one always bitching to get Tasty Cakes into the vending machines because there really is no vending machine in Pennsylvania that does not have Tasty Cakes in. We eventually did, but it was very brief. That's all right. Mission accomplished.
They were too expensive.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Maybe.
What do you think about setting the show specifically in Scranton, Pennsylvania?
It goes along with Slough, England, which is this kind of forgettable town that had a glory day. But I mean, growing up in Philadelphia, Scranton was a joke. So it was always the butt of many jokes.
I think what Greg did was he got very, very specific and used contradictory ideas that you don't see in television.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, there's the big dumb guy, Kevin, but he's really good at basketball.
Right.
And he's a poker savant. But Meredith as well, like, the ways that she was very specific.
Yes, yes. And sometimes I didn't always, like, every once in a while I remember improvising and feeling like, I'm not sure if this is going to work, whatever. I felt like season three was a little bit of a struggle. I felt like I mean, there was a little more trial and error or something. And then I feel like once we got to season four, once I got hit by the car in the Fun Run episode, it was like, we're off to the races. But season three, I felt like I was particularly cut out a lot. And I felt like some of it was like we were trying for things that didn't quite hit. And some of that may have just been me not getting it. But I was a little bit like, oh my gosh, I hope we find something, you know, subtly. And boy, did we. But just kind of like understanding like another layer of like, oh, she's a mess, but she's also not a victim, and she's not as involved, but in a very conscious way. She's not excluded. She just wants to stay in her lane. Like, literally, like, she doesn't want to get involved with, I don't know. I've had women come up to me and be like, oh my God, I'm the Meredith of my office. And it's not just because they're like a drinker, because they usually are, and they're loud and proud. So I totally believe them. Like, only a Meredith would be like, I'm Meredith! Wow! You know, it's like, that to me is like the ultimate compliment.
Right.
It's fantastic. You know, my dad owned a bar. I don't know if you knew this, but
yes.
So I'm a bar owner's daughter. Do you remember that Halloween episode, the first Halloween episode that was supposed to be when it was revealed that Meredith was a drinker and it, the whole thing got cut. And I remember Paul Feig was like, I'm so sorry. The network just wanted more of Michael Scott handing candy to the kids from his new condo. I'm like, oh. Anyway, my dad owned a bar. And my dad understood the complexities of alcoholics too. And some of them were extremely functional in some ways and charming in others and then blow it and then get back, you know, really mess up their life and then get it back together. You know, there's little elements. I felt like there were subtle things that kept showing up, like Meredith's relationship with her son, Jakey, and, you know, bring your daughter to work day. Meredith brings her son, who's a nightmare, and calls Michael Scott Mr. Poop. So good. So good.
Right.
But again, like, and Meredith's like ever forgiving and she's not like a mean mom. She's a little indulgent, you know, which again, like, I don't know if that would have been my first choice, but I totally respect it. And I get it. I see that in other people. And I think, oh my God, the writing was so great. Like they really did not need my help.
Right. I think you touched on something that I never really thought about before, but you have a lot of kind of wonderful moments with Michael Scott.
Yeah.
Like specifically with him, you know, there's obviously the Christmas episode where, you know, you flash him for the first time.
Right.
But yeah, Fun Run, when he hits you with the car, breaks your pelvis. There's a very tender moment at the end of that.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
episode when you hear what he's done for you.
Right. The lollipop, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that Meredith functions kind of solo.
Sort of,
In the group of an ensemble. I mean, this has never occurred to me before.
Yeah.
But, you know, that sort of iconic shot of you playing solitaire on the computer, like there's some connection to that. And you weren't, by and large, you weren't going over and hanging out at sales or coming over to the accountant, which I think gave your character an opportunity to do a lot of special things. And obviously you being gifted physically as well.
Well, it's fun to get to do the physical comedy. And I was thinking, you know, the Valentine episode, the first Valentine episode, season two, when Phyllis is getting all these gifts and Pam is really upset and you just see, you know, Meredith with her big gulp and then we find out that she's drinking and then she's passed out with the lime in her hair. I mean, that to me was like, what a perfect little, just perfect enough. We get it. We've been there. We know that. I mean, again, there's so many layers and it's just, I don't know. I just feel so, just so fortunate to be a part of something that will, I think, always have a respect level that most other TV shows don't have. I really don't.
Yeah. How do you feel like Kate influenced Meredith?
I think for one, I was always willing to do most of my own stunts. And for me, that made it more fun. I felt like I was really experiencing more, if that makes any sense. And I also think the audience knows sometimes when, you know, there's, you know, I don't know if you guys used to watch The Bionic Woman, but there was always like some 6-foot guy in a blonde wig pretending to be Jamie Summers, like so bad. But yeah, it made me feel a little more part of the process. And I felt like it was one of my strengths and I really enjoyed it. So when I was planking in the men's room and Dwight comes and.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
Same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Blows me off the top of the stall with the... fire extinguisher. That was me. So, you know.
you didn't do one thing though.
There's a couple things I didn't do. I didn't get my hair on fire. I did not light my hair on fire. When I heard that there was like face gel involved, I was like, I don't know if I want to.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, yeah, I just meant you didn't shave. You didn't shave.
And I didn't
head.
Shave my head. I did not.
Yeah. Good for you.
I think I disappointed Greg, but that's okay.
Really?
He was shocked. He was like, really? I'm like, I'm sorry, but no. My hair is my thing. What?
Well, actually, leading into that, there was so much sexual stuff.
Yeah.
With Meredith.
Yeah, my parents were so happy about that. My dad's so Catholic, he's like, oh, what is going on?
when people say that we couldn't do the show today, do you think that's a part of it? I was reminded doing the research about you selling sex for steak.
Yeah, for steak coupons. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she was contrite. She admitted it, and she was asking for forgiveness, right? There's got to be, I mean, there was some conscience in that, which is funny and sad. I mean, that's the best thing about The Office, is it's the funny and sad.
Right. There was a time I thought Kevin and Meredith might...
We did kiss that one time.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do.
Did that make it on the air? I don't remember now.
What was the context of that?
Oh my God, I know. I can't remember. It was at my desk.
Yeah, why did we do that? Was it a party? I remember this.
It was like a test.
I think about it every night. I just can't remember.
There's
what
so
the
much
context.
Sexual tension between you and I. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. what was it? I can't remember.
Shoot. I'm not sure. Oh my gosh.
I felt like the writers toyed with it for a minute.
Sure. Yes, they did. I do remember this a little bit. And I think it was before the Valentine episode when Kevin was looking for a girlfriend.
Okay.
I think it was before that. It was to be explored.
That's so fun. I forgot that.
We're not live, so we can't have a fan phone in.
No, we can't.
Answer. Damn it.
No. Yeah, I'm gonna have to think about that. Yeah, I don't know that it aired. Now that I'm thinking about
it. It may not have.
Was that tough for you, though, the getting naked part?
It was a little like, holy shit. But it was a little like jumping out of an airplane. And I will tell you, as great as, Randall and Matt were, I always felt like I didn't get much eye contact at lunch after we shot me being topless. It was a little uncomfortable. And I think the last season 9, there was an episode where we're watching parts of the documentary at Oscar's desk in a scene, and I would have like a little bit of moleskin, and it fell, and Ed's like, whoa, 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 we have to stop this. He was like, we could really see your boob. I'm like, oh no. I had no idea. I was so embarrassed.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Like, ah! Yeah.
No, but you were so fearless in both the physicality that you did and the pranks that you did. I feel like you and I did a lot of really bad. Like I remember the one, which you wouldn't think about it, like watching the show, but we were loading boxes. The warehouse was gone.
Oh, we were loading up a thing. Right.
And there was like oil on the warehouse floor, and we were like pushing boxes. Like that was our idea to be more efficient was to push boxes. And they just kept having me fall. And I'm like, guys, this is concrete. Like, this is not, like, there's no padding.
Right.
There's no thing there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got
that
hit.
Was, I think, the hardest one, from weirdly.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't think it.
Right. No. But it's those little things, because you're not padded. And no, there was no safety meeting about it before. Like, seriously, like, there's a reason why they used to do that stuff, because you don't want to get hurt.
Well, me holding you on my back.
Oh, my God. With the lift up stress.
Yeah.
That was intense. That's one of those things. I was like, what drugs was someone on? Who came up with that idea that Meredith strapped on Kevin's back?
Crazy. Make the idiots perform like monkeys.
What's up, guys? I'm Rashad Bilal.
And I am Troy Millings, and we are the hosts of the Earn Your Leisure podcast, where we break down business models and examine the latest trends in finance.
We hold court and have exclusive interviews with some of the biggest names in business, sport, and entertainment, from DJ Khaled to Mark Cuban, Rick Ross, and Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, our alumni list is expansive.
Listen in as our guests reveal their business models, hardships, and triumphs in their respective fields. The knowledge is in depth, and the questions are always delivered from your standpoint. We want to know what you want to know.
We talk to the legends of business, sports, and entertainment about how they got their start, and most importantly, how they make their money. Earn Your Leisure is a college business class mixed with pop culture.
Want to learn about the real estate game? Unclear as how the stock market works? We got you.
Interested in starting a trucking company or a vending machine business? Not really sure about how taxes or credit work? We got it all covered. The Earn Your Leisure podcast is available now. Listen to Earn Your Leisure on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Dana Goodyear here. Have you ever wondered how a true crime podcast like Lost Hills gets made? How we unearth secrets and tease out the truth and deal with complicated characters while tackling sensitive subjects like violence, trauma, and deception? Now's your chance to find out. Join me and Jake Halpern, host of Pushkin's Deep Cover podcast, on March 16th for a digital conversation on true crime storytelling. Get your tickets now at momenthouse.com/DCLH. That's momenthouse.com/DCLH.
The Gangster Chronicles podcast is a weekly conversation that revolves around the underworld. From criminals and entertainers to victims of crime and law enforcement, we cover all facets of the game. Gangster Chronicles podcast doesn't glorify or promote illicit activities. We just discuss the ramifications and repercussions of these activities. Because after all, if you play gangster games, you are ultimately rewarded with gangster prizes. Our Heart Radio is number one for podcasts, but don't take our word for it. Find the Gangster Chronicles podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you remember about finding out that Steve was leaving?
I literally was with Creed. We were on the set of The Office doing like a satellite press junket. and they had announced it that morning. So every venue wanted to talk about it. And I was like, no! Because, of course, it was emotional. I mean, who are we if we're not? I mean, if Michael Scott, you know, Michael Scott is Thunder Mifflin. He is The Office. I was so freaked out. And literally, I told Creed, I'm like, okay, anytime they talk about this, just pretend like we can't hear the feed. Like, I think the feed's going, I'm sorry, I'm getting some interference. What was the question? Wishing him all the best. Like, we had this little thing where we would figure out how to get out of the conversation. So.
Wow.
But I was definitely freaked out. And I mean, the great thing about our show is that I feel like Greg Daniels is so trustworthy. And I feel like he's picked so many great writers. And I feel like if anything could have survived a couple more years without Steve Carell, it was because of Greg Daniels. But I was nervous. I was nervous about Spader, just because he's not a comedy guy. I mean, he's brilliant, but he's not a comedy guy. And I kind of had this little thing like, oh no, he's holding the baby. He's going to drop the baby. Don't drop the baby. And also I was intimidated because he's like a movie star. And I had seen so many, all of his movies. And, you know, and there was so much sexual tension between the two of us.
Sorry. So much so sexual
much.
Tension.
So much.
But oh my God. But I felt like there was sexual tension between me and Spader.
They're probably even more. Even more.
No,
sure.
Seriously, Spader.
He loved
and anyone.
Right. Yeah.
There's sexual tension.
This is true. The season 8 Christmas episode, there was one take where he's sort of like Meredith thinks she's actually maybe going to go to dinner with him or something, like that she's got a chance with him. And he sort of touches her cheek like, no, no, no. And she goes to hug me. And I literally, one take, I grabbed his ass. And then I was like, immediately when we stopped, I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just felt like, oh my God. He goes, no. He goes, that was the right thing to do. They didn't end up using it, but I was like, don't grab James Spader's ass, Kate. What the fuck
is
wrong with you?
So amazing.
I was so nervous. I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no.
He's
an amazing.
Human being.
Yeah.
Pool party, supposedly at Robert California's house. That was the hardest episode for me to do.
Wow.
I was in the pool a really,
oh God, that's right.
Really, really long time.
Oh my, and it was one of the hardest for me because I had to be in a bathing suit on camera in my 40s. Ugh. My dream. Not. Was
and
nuts.
You think like, you're in a pool. Why are you complaining? But like, because of like hypothermia, they had it heated.
It was heated, but it was gross.
It was heated,
it felt
but
like,
it was indoors. So it was kind of like an old Holiday Inn that you can swim in that's hot. And then you're in it for like, in a day, maybe 9 hours.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like in the water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you guys were doing those chicken fights with Ellie on your shoulder. Yeah, oh my God, that was crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. Again, the sexual tension was off the charts. So we had how important it was, you know, for the pilot specifically, but then the guest casting after that, to not have any stars.
Yes.
To keep it as unknown people.
Yes. Yeah. And I remember even Carol Burnett at the TCAs, she said she loved our show during her speech and she wanted to be involved. And I think they were like, nope, too famous, too funny, too much of
a
legend.
Your mom. Yes, that's right. That was
an
idea.
That was an idea. But yeah. But then, you know, of course, Kathy Bates. Come on.
Kathy Bates.
Come on.
Spader.
And Spader, yeah.
Will.
Well, I loved working with Will. Oh, so fun. Oh, my God. Just the greatest. He had remembered we had had dinner literally in like 94 in New York when he first got hired on SNL with Andy Richter. And I was like, I couldn't believe that he remembered. And I remember being embarrassed because I had a really embarrassing ex-boyfriend who was a real douchebag. He's like, I felt really intimidated because all you guys were from Chicago and I felt like you guys were like so great at I was like, what? It's so crazy. Anyway, but I love Will Ferrell.
That's the best. Great. My story, similar to that, was Kathy Bates went to SMU.
Oh, right.
She was there before me. But while I was there, she'd already won the Oscar.
Oh, my gosh.
And she came back to, like, they opened a new theater. And my mom got a book of Shakespeare's sonnets, sent it to Kathy Bates, told her that I was a really big fan, and I went to SMU, and I did this show. And got it returned. I believe the only autographed item that I have of anyone that I can recall, like to Brian, you know, good luck in your future, blah, 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 Kathy Bates. So I hear she's going to be on the show. And now here we are. And we makeup trailer. And I came up behind her and I said, Kathy, I want to show you. It wasn't her first day. So I did not want to seem like a crazy stalker. But I came up behind her and I said, you know, I just want to show you that my mom, and of course, I wasn't expecting her to remember. I'm sure she's signed, a lot of things. But just to say, like, how crazy is this? That my mom did
full
this.
Circle. That's nuts.
I know. Crazy.
That's nuts.
Crazy.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
She then had me arrested. But
as
it was
she
all right.
would do from time. She had me arrested a lot too. No,
yeah.
That was just a little fun thing we used to do with, no.
Get people arrested. What do you remember about going in to shoot the finale?
I remember trying to be as present as possible and just to try to enjoy all of it because it was such a great ending. And then I remember Greg just saying, one more take. How about this? I remember we were all 2 hours late for our own wrap party. That people were texting and calling, like, where are you? Like, it's like no one wanted to end. There's so few moments like that in this business where you can actually feel the emotional part of the joy that all those years represented and the way all of our lives changed and the way that the show continues to speak to people and like people feel so connected and they feel so comfortable. It's so rare. I mean, really, I make jokes like if I got hit by a car tomorrow, I'd be fine. Like this was such an amazing chapter, you know, and so few actors get this. So few actors. It's really an honor.
Why do you think that young people have connected to the show? Why is the show more popular now than it was then?
Two reasons. The most basic reason is that being in an office like Dunder Mifflin with one big room with all the offices, it's much like being in a classroom. And Michael Scott is like, he's the boss, but he's like the teacher. I mean, I think kids can always relate to having to sit next to someone that they didn't necessarily pick, but they're kind of stuck with for years. And also, I think the show is so smart. There's so many subtle things. You can watch it a million times and see different things that you didn't see before, that you weren't paying attention. Like you can notice different things. There's so many Easter eggs and like weird little things that just kind of keep, and some of it's like stuff that got cut. I don't remember the weight loss episode where like people still have questions about like Meredith's skin because there's a whole storyline where Meredith got sun poisoning on a fishing boat and it got worse and worse as the week went on and it never got explained. And I remember Steve was like, he thought it was so brilliant that they just didn't worry about explaining it. Because how many times do you work with people that you're not that close to and like something's going on, and you're like, I don't even want to know what's going on with it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not even going to. And also like skin is like a weird personal thing. So you wouldn't be like, what's wrong with your skin?
Right.
Like, no one would do, you know. So it's like this kind of wonderful thing that like, it's just, we're just kind of existing as a real documentary would happen where some things are not explained. And I feel like kids are so smart. And I feel like they feel like they're smarter maybe than their parents by the way that they notice The Office in a way that maybe people have been watching very typical sitcoms for years don't necessarily plug into immediately. I feel like they're not as tainted by that. I don't know. That's just a thought.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. No, that's great. All right, last question.
Okay.
Hardest question.
Okay. Uh-oh.
What does The Office mean to you?
The Office means joy, validation, success, love, fun, great process, and probably the best part of my life.
I knew you were going to say love before you said it. I know. I almost said it for you, and then I was like, no, let's let her find it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Kate. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we could get drunk like this.
This is
awesome.
So fun. This coffee has, you have no idea what's in it, actually. No clue.
You don't. No, I love you, Brian. You're so awesome.
No,
I always loved watching your process too. I have to say this because I always felt like you just had certain instincts that like just, I feel like you were such a co-creator and Kevin, like just in your, not speaking as well, but like there would be things that you would just, it was... You were fearless and really amazing. And I feel like, yes, the writing is amazing, but I feel like no one else could do what you did. No one.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. That is all for the one and only Kate Flannery. Kate, I know you called me fearless there, but you are the fearless one. I admire you so much, and I cannot wait to get absolutely wasted with you again soon. And you know what? Same to all you listeners out there. Let's do it sometime, as long as you're of age, of course. But until then, please join me back here next week for another interview. I need to go fill up this coffee cup. The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our senior producer is Tessa Kramer. Our producer is Emily Carr. And our assistant editor is Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Alec Moore. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend Cree Bratton. And the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
I'm Jake Halpern, host of Deep Cover. Our new season is about a lawyer who helped the mob run Chicago. He bribed judges and even helped a hitman walk free. Until one day when he started talking with the FBI, and promised that he could take the mob down. I've spent the past year trying to figure out why he flipped and what he was really after. Listen to Deep Cover on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents.
I didn't know. Maybe you didn't either, but the history of black people ain't rooted in slavery. Oh no, it's royalty, not despair. B. Dot here, and every day in February, I will give you a black history fact that I didn't know, and maybe you didn't either. It's a rugged, ratchet, realistic look at history. Listen to I Didn't Know, Maybe You Didn't Either on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or just wherever you get your podcasts from.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.